It's 2002.
William Henry Cosby, Jr.
Bill Cosby is getting the Medal of Freedom from President George W. Bush. Other honorees that day include Nancy Reagan, Hammering Hank Aaron, and Mr. Rogers.
As a gifted comedian...
The comedian stands to accept the award, and everyone laughs.
As a gifted comedian, actor, and author, Bill Cosby has entertained millions around the world.
Cosby
with his wit,
is so loved that even without speaking, with just a look, people are laughing.
He opened doors for succeeding generations of outstanding black artists while serving as an inspiration to all. From television to film,
then, as if Cosby wrote the bit himself, the president fumbles and can't get the medal fastened around Cosby's neck. It's awkward. It's funny. America's goofy dad. And we were all in on the joke, right? Weren't we?
I never said to anybody that I was America's father.
But America certainly saw him that way. From WHYY in Philadelphia, this is Cosby Unraveled. I'm Annette John Hall. 2002 seems like a long time ago now, doesn't it? On June 5th, Bill Cosby will face felony charges for aggravated indecent assault, and there are dozens of alleged victims.
And from the first sip and then the second sip, I knew I had been drugged.
I woke up out of a very confused state.
My speech was slurred.
Until two sips.
Not in my clothes.
I
was woozy.
Naked, bruised, and battered.
I wanted the police to be able to just confront him and let him know that I know he did something wrong.
Cosby broke boundaries in the entertainment world, gave tens of millions to historically black colleges, $20 million to Spelman College alone, and sent hundreds of young men and women to college, tuition free. It's all part of the legacy. How did someone who did so much good end up accused of doing so much bad? For all of us who watched his career and laughed with him, how did we get here?
There's no question that Bill Cosby was one of the most significant figures in not only African-American culture, but in American society at large.
Michael Eric Dyson is a cultural critic and author.
Over all these years, no matter what he did, what was constant was Bill Cosby would take to a microphone, man, chair, microphone, and just blow audiences away with his extraordinary comedic genius.
Cosby first became famous through stand-up comedy in the 1960s. He won his first of 9 Grammy Awards for his 1965 album, I Started Out as a Child. Routines like Half Man showcase the sometimes silly observational humor that would become his trademark.
Wolfman, right? And here's a guy that I sympathize with because he can never remember his rhythm pattern. He's walking around as a normal human being, then the moon comes up on it. You know, now, a guy like that has got to be embarrassing to his family.
That sounds tame by today's standards, but even 50 years ago, that was the point. His comedy was clean, family-friendly, and maybe the most remarkable thing was that for a black man from inner-city Philadelphia who came up in the projects, his comedy made no mention of race.
Early on, he determined not to use race as a comedic crutch, and he wanted to tell stories that were race neutral and that applied to the American situation, to the human condition.
Cosby's style was in stark contrast to other black comedians of the time like Moms Mabley and Red Fox, who geared their comedy to black audiences, and Dick Gregory, who used his comedy as a sharp social critique against racism.
Well, see, back in my hometown, they make us take a test to vote. Nuclear physics and Russian. And if you pass the test to tell your bar you can't vote, you read Russian, you must be communist.
Dick Gregory was a guy who was, using race as a searing metaphor for American culture and using it to develop his ideas about how we could overcome America's original sin. But Bill Cosby was determined not to be beholden to that. So Bill Cosby developed a style all his own.
In a 1969 interview in Playboy magazine, Cosby explained why he didn't push civil rights issues in his comedy. He said, "The fact that I'm not trying to win converts on stage bugs some people, but I don't think an entertainer can win converts. I've never known any kind of white bigot to pay to see a black man unless the black man was being hung. So I don't spend my hours worrying how to slip a social message into my act. I just go out and do my thing." That didn't mean Cosby was unaware of racial tensions in America. The 1960s were the height of the civil rights struggle. In 1965, the year he won his first Grammy, what the media dubbed racial unrest was on the news almost every night.
"We're going to walk together. We're going to stand together. We're going to sing together. We're going to stay together. We're going to moan together. We're going to groan together. And after a while, we'll say, freedom, freedom, freedom now!"
Protesters marching for voting rights were attacked and beaten on the Edmund Pettus Bridge in Selma, Alabama. Watts burned. Malcolm X was assassinated in New York. If you were black in America, it was impossible not to have experienced racism. Cosby had experienced racism while breaking into comedy. He talked about it in a 1991 interview on Fresh Air.
"There was really no place that had a sign saying that Negroes could come here and do stand-up comedy."
In 1965, Cosby was the first African-American to star on a dramatic television series, I Spy. He made sure the series writers were on board with creating a black character that broke the mold.
"I certainly was not going to be a black joke, and I certainly was not going to be afraid of ghosts."
Cosby knew he would have to be diligent to avoid comedy stereotypes, and he was serious.
"I had done a show prior to I Spy called That Was the Week That Was, and it was comedy, and I was the only Negro on the program. And some of the scripts that came through, I never did some of those routines because the jokes were always about my color. And I said to the writers, I'm not doing it. So finally, one of the writers came out. I said, well, why aren't you doing these jokes? I said, well, these jokes are all about, they're on me, and they're about my color, and you guys are not writing anything to counter. I don't counter this person's statement to me. And if it is funny, then why can't I say this about the white guy?"
His keen awareness of how the black image could be manipulated made him careful about his roles. It also made him a supporter of civil rights issues offstage. Again, Michael Eric Dyson.
"Privately, he was always raising money for great causes and speaking to the need for civil rights and the like. His very appeal to a race-neutral humanity had its own weight, its own moral composure, its own ethical composition."
And then came the family that changed everything. In making the decision not to play the comedic race card, Cosby had a huge effect on how white America saw black people and how black people saw themselves with the introduction of the Huxtables in the 1980s.
"Leo?
Yo!
Son, your mother asked me to come up here and kill you."
Again, Michael Eric Dyson.
In 1984, he, of course, revolutionized the sitcom. Not just black sitcoms. He saved the sitcom. He saved NBC. He saved American television, became one of the most popular shows in the history of the medium, and revolutionized American consciousness about the black middle class.
The Cosby Show did not revolve around the upper middle class African-American family wrestling with issues of race. The themes could have fit any family sitcom, from Ozzie and Harriet to the Brady Bunch. Mom being the one in charge, first kisses, first jobs, and first cars.
"I hope you are ready for this, because Denise has some news for you.
I got my driver's license, yeah. I got my test, yeah. Wanna
to talk to you about something.
You can't borrow my car.
Airing on NBC from 1984 until 1992, The Cosby Show was relentlessly positive and wildly popular. Every Thursday night, America, but specifically Black America, got a chance to see a Black family that we could all relate to.
It was amazing. I mean, I was like completely like, who are these people?
Salamisha Tillett is a professor of Africana Studies at the University of Pennsylvania. She was about 8 years old when she first saw the show. And she loved how it was filled with cultural references to Black art and artists, to the jazz that Bill Cosby loved, and to the historic Black colleges and universities that he supported.
Just the ways in which he was able to show the complexity of African-American identity. The show was trying to embrace and celebrate certain aspects of African-American musical culture and visual culture. As a kid, it was extraordinary to see that on the small screen.
The Cosby Show is probably the most significant sort of entertainment impact that Bill Cosby had on my life.
Dr. James Peterson is the head of Africana Studies at Lehigh University and host of the WHYY podcast, The Remix.
The narrative of Black fatherhood for most of my life has been one of Black fathers being absent from the family. Black fathers not being engaged with their children, not being good providers, that Black fathers doing what they're supposed to do was an exception, not the rule. And so Cosby's embrace of Black fatherhood was relatively unique in terms of Black comedic performance and Black comedic expression at the time.
If you were Black and middle class, you saw yourself reflected. If you were upwardly mobile, you saw the payoff of your aspirations. Coming in a career that contained a long list of firsts, the show confirmed Cosby's status as a true pioneer for Black America. Comedian Dave Chappelle paid tribute in a 2017 Netflix special.
I remember that he's the first Black man to ever win an Emmy in television. I also remember that he's the first guy to make a cartoon with Black characters where their lips and noses were drawn proportionally. I remember that he had a television show that got numbers equivalent to the Super Bowl every Thursday night. And I remember that he partnered up with a clinical psychologist to make sure that there was not one negative image of African Americans on his show. I'm telling you, it's no small thing. I've had a television show. I wouldn't have done that shit.
America's love affair with the Huxtables reaffirmed Cosby's popularity. Reruns kept the characters alive long after the show ended. And the spinoff, A Different World, followed daughter Denise, played by Lisa Bonet, to college.
Hello?
Daddy!
Who's this?
Dad?
Are you flunking everything?
Dad!
Are you in jail?
No! I'm just calling to say hi.
Swear.
Yes!
Hey, Denise!
But in 2004, the image of Cosby as Cliff Huxtable, the fun-loving, cool dad, slid away.
People getting shot in the back of the head over a piece of pound cake. And then we all run out and we're outraged. Oh, the cop shouldn't have shot him. What the hell was he doing with the pound cake in his hand?
Cosby delivered a speech at an NAACP event commemorating the 50th anniversary of Brown versus the Board of Education. It became known as the pound cake speech.
I'm talking about these people who cry when their son is standing there in an orange suit. Where were you when he was 2? Where were you when he was 12? Where were you when he was 18? And how come you don't know he had a pistol?
He scolded and criticized poor urban Blacks for not speaking correctly, not raising their children properly, and squandering everything early civil rights activists had fought for.
When I think about the pound cake speech, what stood out to me was its striking venom toward, you know, poor Black vulnerable people.
Michael Eric Dyson critiqued the speech in his 2005 book, Is Bill Cosby Right or Has the Black Middle Class Lost Its Mind?
There's a big shift between Cosby before the speech and Cosby after. Cosby before the speech, beloved icon who embraced all of America, who had nothing or little to say about race in his comedic act. although privately he gave to black causes. Afterward, a withering indictment of poor black people in America, he became known as a public moralist.
Cosby didn't stop with a single speech. He toured the country speaking to black community groups in what he described as call-outs.
There's more to come on The Bill Cosby Call-Out.
What's your son writing on the walls? Look at his magazines. What's he reading? What's he saying? Because there may be a gun hidden somewhere.
It's not just a pick yourself up by your bootstrap speech to African Americans.
Again, Salamisha Tillett.
But he spends a lot of time like vilifying and demonizing and caricaturizing like African American people, working class people, but particularly black women.
Not everyone was angered by the call outs.
He was so real. I mean, Bill was like that.
For Bilal Qayyum, an activist in Philadelphia, Cosby was deeply committed to the city's black community, and Qayyum worked with him.
I set up a series of forums, small discussion, 20, 30 women with Bill Cosby. And we did 5 public housing units, and the discussion was great. He talked about the personal responsibility issue, and he also was very sympathetic about their conditions, how they lived, maybe 150, 160 women, and myself and Bill Cosby.
But he and Cosby didn't always see eye to eye.
I really believe that our condition, when I say ours, in particular about African-American community, is driven by white institutional racism over the years. And he understood that, but didn't believe that that was a reason why we shouldn't shake it off and move on. So we would have debates about that.
But Qayyum felt like he and Cosby were on the same team and shared the same mission.
I sense a genuine commitment that what he was doing and speaking out about issues around, particularly the African-American community, that he was serious about it. And some of them were very controversial positions. No other entertainer came and walked the streets with us, went door to door, talking to folks. Dr. Cosby.
Qayyum says much of the good work Cosby did has been lost in the sexual assault allegations.
How do you convict a man before he has a trial? And I think that America has basically convicted him before he has a trial. I mean, they stripped him of everything. I mean, all of his money that he donated to black colleges and all that great stuff he's done.
There's no consensus of opinion in the black community on the charges against Cosby. Even for the people in the neighborhood where the entertainer grew up, the Richard Allen Homes in North Philadelphia, opinions differ from block to block.
Now that people coming forward saying that he did this and did that, all I'm saying is, why wait so long to do something about something?
Andrea Adams.
If he did something, why didn't you address that back then? Why you gonna do it now? That's all I'm saying.
And Barry Williams.
You know, it's like, why? Doesn't make any sense. You know? You wonder, is he sick? Like, is there some type of mental illness going on there that think that it's all right to drug women, then force yourself on them? It's like you got to wonder about a person's mental health.
Bilal Qayyum and Michael Eric Dyson may disagree on Cosby's approach to the problems of the black community, but they do agree that what happened to Cosby is not just about being accused of a crime. It's about race. Here's Qayyum.
There's always a double standard in America when it's black folks and white folks. There's case after case after case after case.
And Michael Eric Dyson.
Whatever Bill Cosby has done that is legally reprehensible and morally offensive, he should be held to account. But we can't deny that there's a racial element to it as well.
Compared to cases like Woody Allen and Roman Polanski, it's hard for many African Americans to not see race at play. Bill Cosby's daughters recently spoke out publicly about their father on the New York radio show The Breakfast Club. His daughter Erin pointed to a long history of legal injustice to blacks.
I cannot understand how our society has permitted my father to be condemned so unjustly and cruelly in the court of public opinion without evidence or proof and with no verdict or judgment. Like the cruel history of our people, the legal system and the protections of the law do not seem to exist for him today.
James Peterson.
Yes, people still love Woody Allen movies and will go see Woody Allen movies. Roman Polanski, same thing, to a lesser extent, because he's been ostracized in some ways. But the reality is those are white men. And in the system that we're in, white men enjoy privileges that black men will never enjoy. I don't think it's a privilege to be able to assault women, but they enjoy the legal privilege of being considered innocent until proven guilty. That's unfortunate, but that's how race operates in America.
Next time on Cosby Unraveled.
We are here to announce today charges that have just been filed against William Henry Cosby.
If he gave women drugs without their knowledge and consent and or over their objection, that would be a criminal act.
The old saying, there are two sides to every story, unravels when you're dealing with lawyers.
People do not seem to understand the despair that many rape victims find themselves in.
I think it's our responsibility not to compartmentalize and forgive someone's celebrity status for huge transgressions.
Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Special thanks to WHYY's Danny Miller and Dr. James Peterson. The music on the show was created by Tony Trove and Mike Vivas. Brett Rader saved our lives with editing help at Crunch Time. Shout out to Mixmaster Charlie Kyer and engineers Diana Martinez and Bob, don't forget the S, Alls. The show was produced by Lindsay Lazarski and Jeanette Woods. I'm Annette John Hall. If you're looking for another podcast, check out one of our favorites, Reveal, from the Center for Investigative Reporting and PRX. Hosted by Al Letson, Reveal is the first of its kind investigative program. Their team of reporters can spend months, sometimes years, digging to get to the truth. Reveal tells stories of injustice and holds the powerful accountable. You can find Reveal on iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts. Learn more at revealnews.org.